Welcome to the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa, a spiritual community that promotes global transformation through personal transformation. At the center, we are motivated by a compelling vision of a healthy, loving world, which we call the Global Heart Vision. This vision inspires us to bring the gifts of compassion and loving kindness to the world through our ministries and teaching. What you are about to hear is a recording of a message delivered at the Center for Spiritual Living Santa Rosa. Feel welcomed. Feel at home. Thank you, Chris and gentlemen, for that very heart-opening song, wasn't it? My goodness. And what a good space for us to be in as we consider this month's call to action. I promote diversity and inclusion. That's what we're aiming for this month. How can we promote diversity and inclusion? We're starting today to consider what diversity is. And I know when I see that that topic's going to be discussed, I always think, oh, we're going to be talking about people who aren't like me. And that is true. Of course, diversity means a lot more than that in its original sense. It actually comes from the Latin word divertere, which means to turn in different directions. And I get that because, you know, I can be looking this way and my attention's on one thing, then I could be looking this way and my attention's on something else. Or I could have an object, and if I turn it, I get to appreciate different aspects of it. So diversity is all about appreciating different aspects of the one. Perhaps you were here a couple weeks ago when Reverend Kim spoke. He used a quote, and when I saw it, I thought, I'm resurrecting that quote 2 weeks from now because it's perfect. It's from Ernest Holmes, who said, "While we have one common source, divine wisdom has seen fit to make each an individual. Unity does not mean uniformity. There is unity at the center with infinite variation at the circumference." Infinite variation at the circumference. He also said this: everything in the universe is a unique, individualized expression of the one thing that is the cause of all things. No two blades of grass are alike, no two thumbprints, no two anything. I mean, really, what kind of a boring original creator would it be if it only created one type of thing? Can you imagine a universe where there were many things that were all the same? Of course, it would be boring. But that doesn't stop me from occasionally wishing that everybody was just like me. I sense from your response that maybe you've thought that too. Now, I've always kind of suspected that that isn't actually true. But this week, I got hard evidence. I got evidence that, no, it would not be easier if everyone is like me. I have a friend who offered to help me file a stack of papers, and I leapt at the opportunity because we're very much alike, same kind of personality, we like each other, we understand each other, there's an easy flow between us, you know what I mean, no edges, because the person is really just like you, thinks like you and everything. Well, the difficulty came when we started to organize the papers that we realized we're both alike when it comes to organizing. It's not our best skill, and truthfully, neither of us actually like doing it. So the task took probably twice as long as it needed to and involved much mumbling to ourselves. And at the end, you know, we were still kind of smiling at each other, but we were clearly depleted because it wasn't a natural and easy thing for us to do. And that's when I got, no, I don't want to be in a world where everyone is like me. I actually need other types of people. So I think we can agree that it's a good thing that we're different, good thing that people are different. The difficulty comes when we don't like the way we're different, when we don't like the actual difference itself. The difficulty comes when we don't like the difference, or more accurately, when we don't understand the difference. When we make the mistake of labeling something different in someone else as not as good as me. Thank goodness there's been a lot of work in the past few decades about personality types, so that the natural, normal differences, the natural, normal way that people are configured and where they're like us and where they're not like us, this natural way and learning about it is great so that we can understand each other, so that we can avoid conflict with each other, so that we can value and use our differences in a mutually beneficial way. So here's another example from my own life, and I see that I've actually put dates in here, so they're looking pretty ancient at the moment. Anyhow, it's the late 70s, okay? I know some of us weren't born yet, but it's the late 70s, and I start to date a guy named Kim Kaiser. Now, I come from a family that had a tradition of spending Sunday afternoons by getting together and sitting all together on the couch and chit-chatting for 4 hours. This was our idea of fun. So I start to date Kim, and we do this a few times, and then one Sunday he says to me, "Can we do something else today rather than visit your family?" Well, this was like an emotional shockwave, and it had emotional aftershocks as I started to think things like, he doesn't like my family. Therefore, he probably really doesn't like me because I'm like them. And what is this something else that could possibly be more entertaining than being with my family? So this was a seed of a thought, right? So fast forward 7 years. It's the mid-80s, we are a married couple, and probably I was still suspecting he didn't like my family. And at this point, we each had the opportunity to take the Myers-Briggs personality type test. Yeah, a lot of us have done this now. It was like, you know, just, it was the rage in the mid-80s. So one of the categories is about the difference between an extrovert and an introvert. Now, I realize it's pretty common knowledge now, but this was the mid-80s. So lo and behold, what the type testing reveals is that Kim's an introvert and I'm an extrovert. Who knew? And one of the things this means is that I can get energy from being with people, whereas he gets energy more likely from being alone and quiet. Meaning that 4 hours of chit-chat with my family was energizing to me and depleting to him. Nothing to do with my family, everything to do with the activity. When I realized this difference in personality types, instantaneous forgiveness of 7 years, forgiving Kim for not wanting to be with my family, forgiving myself for blaming him unfairly for not even liking my family. Holmes reminds us, if our human relations are to mean the most to us, we must sense that there is hidden within, around, and through each of us a divine presence manifesting itself in infinite variations. The same impulse, the same love and life, but never quite alike in any two persons. So I want to have this be a grounding thought for us as we continue to explore differences in people. The same impulse, the same divine impulse, the same love and life, but never quite alike in its expression in two people. So all those years, both Kim and I were both seeking rejuvenation in our individual ways on Sunday afternoon. For me, in my own way of being with people, and for Kim in his way of spending time just with me, going for a hike. It had nothing to do with my family. It was just simply two different approaches of experiencing peace and rejuvenation. One more Holmes quote. We need never view human personality as something unreal or unworthy, but rather as an individualization of the divine. It is the universal spirit that is incarnated in each one in a unique way, and that gives warmth, color, and variation to that which otherwise would be an eternal monotony. Well, nobody wants an eternal monotony. So how can we reduce the chances for misunderstanding and conflict? This is a helpful way to think of things. This diagram represents a pitfall in our thinking. It shows on the bottom there that something happens, the actual event. But then what happens when we see it, we put our individual interpretation on it, and then that becomes a piece of a generalization that forms our worldview. And then, of course, that worldview starts to impact the next time an actual event comes up and how we perceive it. So in my example, the actual event was Kim saying, can we do something else today rather than visit your family? That was the actual event. Now, I didn't fully explore what he wanted to do, what his reasons were behind this, but I went to an assumption. I made an interpretation of a statement, which was my interpretation, Kim doesn't want to be with my family. And that led to a general outlook of mine that was, Kim doesn't like my family. And that became a dynamic in our relationship. So that every time Kim even referred to my family, I was already, you know, on guard to hear what he was going to say about how he didn't like them. Can you imagine? I mean, this whole drama going on, and he didn't even know about it. So back to the question, how can we reduce the chances for misunderstanding and conflict? Number one, we can remember that differences are natural. And more than that, differences are by divine design. As we read in that Holmes quote, the same impulse, the same love and life, but never quite alike in any two persons. And secondly, we can find ourselves, when we find ourselves judging somebody for their differences, we can take a moment to review the actual incident that has led to our thoughts. So we can actually have a little conversation with ourselves like, well, I guess I don't like so-and-so. Oh, really? Because they did such and such. Oh, and what does that mean? Well, it means they're not a nice person. I see. Can you think of another reason they might have done that? And so as we continue in this kind of self-reflection, we begin more and more to give others the benefit of the doubt in our judgment. We look for reasons beyond our own judging of them. The self-reflection can lead us to remember the same impulse, the same life and love that is taking a different form of expression from what mine would be. The example that we looked at about two different people, me and Kim, different people, but actually people who have a lot in common. He and I both grew up in the Midwest and moved to California. We're both college educated, and we're about the same age. So we can appreciate how much more opportunity there might be for misunderstanding when it involves people whose backgrounds are not alike. Here's another story. It's not about me. It's the mid-60s, Los Angeles, and there's been blatant unfair treatment of black people by police. And eventually something triggers and erupts into 6 days of what later became known as the Watts Riots. Now, because of the unrest, black school children in the area were only able to continue their education by being bused to schools that were untouched by the rioting. Of course, this meant schools with white teachers, and in fact, white teachers who had never worked with black students. Our story focuses on one particular elementary school where this was not working well. The white teachers were becoming frustrated and suspicious, and tensions between teachers and students were escalating. Due to this increasing tension, the school requested an outside consultant to come in. They called UCLA, and somebody who came in was a white woman, and she had studied and had skill in spotting difficulties in intercultural communication. So the woman came in, and she took an approach similar to ours in looking for that actual event. When she started talking to teachers, she was getting things like, these students are troublemakers, these students are liars. But as she kept probing as to how the teachers got that impression, one of the teachers finally said, all I can tell you is that these black students never look you in the eye. That's the actual event. They never look you in the eye. Now, of course, in the cultural background of the teachers, making eye contact is associated with honesty and forthrightness, as in, I have nothing to hide. And here were these black children who were not making eye contact with them. So our intercultural resource person went to a black colleague at UCLA and said to him, can you tell me any reason why a black child might not look their teacher in the eye? And he said, yes, of course, they're showing respect. So here were the children trained at home to respect elders by averting eye contact when they spoke to them, interacting with teachers who expected eye contact as a sign of honesty. Here were the children relaying respect, and here were the teachers not recognizing this form of respect and making judgments based in their own way of behaving, their own behavioral norms. The same impulse, the same love and life, but never quite alike in any two persons. Sam, could you mute me for a minute? Thank you for clearing your throats with me. I was in the Peace Corps, and one of the things I learned as a guideline is that if you're ever interacting with somebody from a different culture and you find yourself thinking something's wrong with them, or maybe even they're crazy, then it could very well be that what you have come up against is a cultural difference, a difference in worldview, in values, or in expressing those values. The same impulse, the same love and life, but never alike in two persons. I'd like to share an example of intercultural misunderstanding that happens when that underlying impulse is not recognized due to different forms of expression. This comes from a book entitled Cross-Cultural Dialogues, 74 Brief Encounters with Cultural Differences. And the story takes place in Japan with an American in Japan. And as you may have noticed, if you grew up in the United States, we place high value on individual effort and achievement. You might remember some of the ways you were encouraged to make it on your own, to excel for who you are, to personally triumph over the competition. So you can imagine that there might be a misunderstanding when an American of the do-it-on-your-own worldview interacts with someone from a culture that places more importance on group cooperation rather than the individual standing out. So here we are in Japan, and here's the conversation between two managers, Mr. Kaneda, Japanese, and Miss Walden, American. So Mr. Kaneda says, "Are you satisfied then, Miss Walden, with the work of the accounting division?" And Miss Walden says, "Very much. Their output has improved tremendously." Mr. Kaneda says, "They are very proud of their work." Miss Walden says, "As soon as you put Mr. Yamamoto in charge, things began to turn around." Mr. Kaneda, "Yes, the whole team is working very smoothly now." Miss Walden, "Will you be giving Mr. Yamamoto some kind of recognition then?" Mr. Kaneda, "Excuse me?" Miss Walden, "You know, an award or something." Mr. Kaneda, I hardly think so. We wouldn't want to embarrass him after all he's done." Right? So again, this is a culture where people are individuals, but it's the group effort that is recognized, not an individual. It's recognized that no one can do anything on their own. And it would be embarrassing to pull out one person from a team and applaud them. Many different expressions of the one source. Finally, as Holmes reminds us, the thought of God must be the cause of all that exists. And as there are many existing things, there must be many thoughts in the mind of the infinite. An infinite mind would conceive an infinite variety of ideas, hence the world of multiplicity or many things. But the world of multiplicity does not contradict the world of unity, for the many live in the one. We've traveled to a lot of different places during this talk, and as we close today, I invite you to bring your attention to yourself, to your own life, to you as an expression of the divine, surrounded by other expressions of the divine. As you turn within, perhaps taking a moment to relax your body, noticing how comfortable it is, I invite you to bring to mind someone who is dear to you, someone you know very well. Can you think of one way in which you two are different? Can you see how this difference is a value to you in your relationship? And can you see how you are the same? Can you see what unites you?
You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
And now I invite you to bring to mind an acquaintance, someone you kind of know, maybe someone you work with. Can you think of one way in which you two are different? And can you see how this difference is of value to you in your relationship? And now notice how you are the same. What is it that unites you?
You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
And finally, bring to mind someone you're not close with, someone you don't know well, and perhaps someone you don't want to know well. Can you think of a way in which you two are different? Can you see how this difference might be of value to you in your relationship? And now consider, how are you the same? What is it that unites you?
You are the face of God. I hold you in my heart. You are a part of me. You are the face of God.
And so remembering that there is just one source of all life, of all love, of all good, I give thanks for the way that it is true that I am part of this. It is part of me. that every person here and beyond, every person is an expression of this one life, this one love, this one good. Each of us finding greater and greater ways to experience love and life and good among ourselves. And so I welcome for all of us a growing appreciation of the vast diversity of life, a treasuring of what is special and unique in ourselves and in each other. I accept with us ease in a one-mind understanding of people who seem to have different views, different ways of doing things. Always knowing that right where we are, God is, and all is well. So for the way this demonstrates in our collective experience, I give thanks now as this word is released. And together we can say, and so it is.